Ralph Nader is perhaps best known as a consumer activist who fought to make cars safer starting back in the 1960s. He's also best known as the former Green Party presidential candidate who got millions of votes. Critics interpret that to mean Nader took votes away from Al Gore and handed George W. Bush the keys to the White House back in 2000.
Well, in recent years, Ralph Nader has turned into an author. He's written a novel. His new book is called Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. It's not a novel. Two of his examples of this emerging left-right alliance are hot topics right here in Seattle: drug legalization and the push to raise the minimum wage.
The book's getting rave reviews from across the political spectrum, from small government conservative Grover Norquist to lefty professor Cornel West. And Nader says Norquist and West have some things in common.
They both are against militaristic foreign policies and empire. They're against Wall Street crooks getting off and not being subjected to law enforcement. They're against the bailouts of big business. They would like the civil liberties restored in our country by revising the Patriot Act and stop NSA snooping. They both support prison reform and reducing those ridiculous long sentences for people caught with a few ounces of marijuana, etc. And they have an animosity, one might put it, to government waste, maybe for different reasons. But I think they both agree that a good step is to put all the full text of government contracts and hundreds of billions of dollars worth of contracts online so they can be examined by the press, by taxpayer groups, and by competitors.
As you know, Washington State and also Colorado recently legalized recreational marijuana. What do you see in those movements that's promising from your perspective as somebody who's a champion of what you're calling an emerging libertarian-liberal alliance?
Well, I think that kicked in as a liberal-conservative alliance. Libertarians don't like restrictions on what people can use, and progressives think that there's a lot of use to medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. So I don't particularly like addictive drugs, but I can tell you that the progress, if you want to call it that, for legalizing marijuana has come from both left and right. And right now, up in Seattle, you know, as you know, there's a drive, I think, by the mayor for a $15 minimum wage. Well, guess what? Minimum wage restoration to at least between $10 and $11 is supported by 70 to 80% of the American people. And when you get that kind of poll result, you know that there are a lot of conservative and liberal workers who are supporting that restoration.
I want to actually ask you about that, take a closer look at this left-right alliance, where you see it possible on the minimum wage. Of course, it's a huge topic in Seattle these days. What's the thinking behind a conservative case for raising the minimum wage?
Well, Ron Unz, U-N-Z, spelled in California, a prominent conservative, former publisher of the American Conservative, says the main argument for conservatives is that it'll save taxpayer money, because the more living wage people get, the less they're going to be on food stamps, housing assistance, Medicaid, and they see it as lightening the load on the taxpayer. On the other side, we see it as human rights, as a fair wage for a full day's work. And it's interesting, just in the last few days, Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum have come out for a higher minimum wage, and also the former governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, Republican.
Well, yeah, but of course, most Republicans these days aren't buying that. In fact, as you know, Republicans pretty recently defeated a proposed hike to the federal minimum wage in the U.S. Senate. Why don't more Republicans share your vision of this emerging alliance?
They do back home, but in Congress, they haven't gotten a message yet. They're still too busy dialing for commercial dollars, Walmart, McDonald's, Wall Street, etc. And that's the whole point of the book, that the broad verbal agreement between left and right in 24 areas that I list in the book have got to become more visible, more cogent, more demanding, until the press picks it up. When the press picks it up, it's more likely that these issues will finally get on the table of incumbent politicians and candidates running for election.
So if we could just stick with the minimum wage for one more minute here, how do you persuade conservatives who are Republicans actually in power to take the path, your path, and not the one that they've been taking?
It's pretty simple. If they want the economy to recover, consumer demand is the way to do it. The second is, there are all kinds of conservative philosophers over 250 years that I've summarized in my book, who believe that workers should get a decent wage. And third, I think a lot of conservatives abide by the golden rule. And the golden rule would say that you don't have 30 million American workers in this country who really sweat it every day, serving our food, cleaning up after us, taking care of our ailing relatives, making less than workers made in 1968, adjusted for inflation, a lot less. The federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. They could go to $10.90 and just equal the minimum wage in 1968, inflation adjusted.
And you mentioned Mitt Romney as somebody who's backing at least an increase in the federal minimum wage. Senator Rand Paul is somebody else you've spoken about recently as somebody that you see as potentially a part of this emerging libertarian progressive alliance. But he says, you know, increasing the federal minimum wage is going to lead to higher unemployment. What's the libertarian case for raising the minimum wage?
Well, there isn't. That's an area where we disagree. I mean, let's face it. There are tens of millions of people out there who disagree with each other on a right-left divide on issue A, B, C, D, like gun control, reproductive rights, etc. But they also agree on issues W, X, Y, Z, some of which I mentioned. They agree that the big New York banks should be broken up because they're too big to fail. As George Will, the conservative columnist, said, if they're too big to fail, they're too big to exist. So let's focus on the agreements because they're in extremely important areas in terms of constitutionalism, civil rights, anti-empire, and a fair level of trade agreements abroad that don't pull down our country and infringe excessively our sovereignty.
If you think you recognize the voice you're hearing right now, you probably do. It's Ralph Nader. His latest book is called Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And you spoke a little bit about this earlier, but just to go a little bit further, in order for this libertarian progressive alliance to work or conservative liberal alliance to work, what do progressives need to give up?
They don't need to give up anything. The whole idea here is not to have a left-right alliance that cuts the mustard on an area. We'll only have two wars overseas, not four. This is where left-right come together without sacrificing their principles. And I was just talking with Ron Paul a few days ago, and he made that very point. He said, we don't have to sacrifice our principles to have a left-right alliance against corporatism. The corporate domination of our government is a phenomenon that Franklin Delano Roosevelt commented on in 1938 in a message to Congress. And when he said, in effect, when government's controlled by private economic power, quote, that's fascism, end quote.
What is it about Ralph Nader? What is it about your upbringing that makes you open to what Rand Paul is saying and what Cornel West is saying? How were you raised? How did you get to be this person?
Well, my parents basically said, if you want freedom, you have to have responsibility, civic responsibility. You got to do your bit and get engaged locally, state, national. Make sure you vote in an informed way and join citizen groups. Well, I started a lot of citizen groups because we need thousands of citizen groups all over the country to bring a strong fiber, a backbone to democracy. In fact, I've become infatuated lately, David, with the $2 bill, because if you look at the $2 bill, on one side, it's a picture of the patriots who congregated in a room in 1776 to sign the Declaration of Independence. So when I show people the $2 bill, I say, aren't you glad these people showed up? Well, when are you going to show up? Show up at the polls, show up rallies, marches, show up for neighborhood meetings on very serious issues, not just playing video games. Half of democracy is showing up. And when we show up, we'll see if we can get things done in this country.
And how does that message apply in the book? If you could just sum it up, the book's Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State.
What applies is a lot of people in this country are being mistreated, disrespected, underinsured, harmed by toxic chemicals, ripped off by billing fraud, on and on. And that's the reality. And so we apply the principles of fair play, and that will attract the left-right alliance, except for those who have a ideological or economic axe to grind. But that leaves a lot of tens of millions of people that can make themselves visible, known to the decision makers, and be an unstoppable force. As the way, by the way, when Senator Magnuson from your home state, he used to be a big business senator, he heard the rumble from the people in the 60s, became the greatest champion of consumer legislation in Senate history. So we're not just talking about changing elections. We're talking about focusing on incumbents. When they see that left-right alliance coming at them, whether through emails or telephone calls or meetings, town meetings back home or marches, it's unstoppable.
It's Ralph Nader. He's got a new book, Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Ross Reynolds. I'm David Hyde.